Right, we're going to move on now. 21 Lakeshore Toolkit Resources Tips and Permits. Jake Davis.
Might be having some technical difficulty. The camera froze up on me and I can't get it back.
Okay. Let's see. Is on.
Yeah, but Jake, can you screen share still?
Let me try, Chris.
Yeah, you can, Jake. You're good.
That's working. You can see the
Yep.
presentation.
Yes.
Sounds good. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. My name is Jake Davis. I'm a Fisheries Program Administrator. Apologize, I'm not there in person this morning, but needed to get some kids shuffled around to their needed locations at ClearFish. So this morning, I have a very brief presentation on some additional information that was recently added to the Game Fish and Parks website. This information was live about 2 weeks ago. And what it is we've really just focused on pulling together some information that might be useful for folks that may own shoreline property in South Dakota. So really, we're calling it our Lakeshore Toolkit. It's information that in the past, it was usually just exchanged with on a localized level. So it was information on resources as far as what's available to Lakeshore property owner, anybody that's just interested in Lakeshore property, permits that may be required for certain activities. When this information was desired in the past, generally that happened by reaching out to the local aquatic habitat and access biologist or the local area fisheries supervisor. Depending on the topic, that information was just really exchanged at a local level. In some cases, it was one-on-one. In other instances, it was that staff member visiting with a specific lake association. What we're seeing over the last couple of years, though, is just an increasing interest for this information, desire from the public to have it in one location. And so that's what we did, was work to pull it together on the website so that staff can either direct folks to that, they can either find that information on their own and then reach out to a staff member. But again, really just pulling that information together in one central location. I do want to mention that we didn't change any, say, permitting requirements with this. We didn't change any of the way that permit or applications are reviewed. This was simply just pulling information that may have been in several different locations on the website and putting it in one spot. So this presentation, I'm just going to cover some of the topics that users can find when they go to this Lakeshore Toolkit that's on the website. One of the first items that's covered is shoreline alterations. One popular activity with folks that own shoreline property is modifying that. And in some cases, there may be a permit that's required. And what we talk about for shoreline alterations is really anything that may impact a shoreline or a lake bed. Then this shoreline alteration is really an area that they may want to look into before they conduct any activities. One of the things that's very important is if the water body that they're working with has an ordinary high water mark. This ordinary high water mark is where the water generally meets the shoreline on a consistent basis. Now, in many cases, this is actually a set elevation. There is a database maintained by Department of Ag and Natural Resources that lists known or marked ordinary high water marks. So if it's a water body and folks are unsure, they can go to our Lakeshore Toolkit, and then also there'll be a link to the Danner website that has marked ordinary high water marks. Now, if it's an impoundment, that ordinary high water mark is going to be the spillway crest. Why this is important is because if it's say, a meandered water body, the property below that ordinary high water mark is public. And so this map here is posted on the website as well. This is just an example. So you can see that dashed red line. That's an ordinary high water mark, theoretically marked. And then the water or the land below that is publicly accessible. Anything above that may be privately owned or publicly, depending on who that landowner might be. But what's important to know is that property below that ordinary high water mark is public. So as a result, there's some regulations that go along with that. And so if there's work that's going to be done by a landowner or property owner near that ordinary high water mark, they may look into needing a shoreline alteration permit. Some examples of work might include riprapping or constructing some kind of retaining wall, dredging, things like that. Anything, again, that may modify that shoreline or the lake bed. So we outline that process with this shoreline alteration. So that's just one example there. Again, the shoreline alteration permit's been in place for quite some time. It's just better defined now, hopefully, and as far as what activities may require that. Additionally, there's contact information for our local aquatic habitat and access biologists if folks have additional questions. Another topic that we cover is aquatic vegetation management. Aquatic vegetation is a natural phenomenon, natural process, and in many cases, it indicates good system health when you have vegetation growth. It also provides fish habitat, produces oxygen. It can be a really good thing. However, in excess, it can impact recreation and at times become a nuisance. That being said, there are some different methods that are out there and available to lakeshore property owners as far as removing vegetation. We outline those here. You can see with this image here, there's manual, mechanical, biological, and chemical are some of the examples we have out there. But the important thing to note is some of those actions may require permitting. And so we want to make sure that we outline that and also the process that goes with it. So, for example, if there's going to be a chemical application for aquatic vegetation management, that does need to be permitted through Game Fish and Parks. There's also potentially permits that may come from Danner. If there's going to be some kind of vegetation removal that might disturb sediments, then there is a permit that is required through Danner. So we provide those links, provide that pathway so that folks, again, know what their options are. But in certain cases, if it's a regulatory action, they know where they can get that permit, or at least put that application in. One of the next topics that we cover, this really has nothing to do with permitting, but it's something that often comes up in, say, Eastern South Dakota waters, but it can be on statewide level as well. But just the topic of algae blooms. This comes up frequently during the summer, especially if we've had a warm summer. When you have the combination of increased water temps and then also nutrient rich systems, we often have algae blooms. Now, in some cases, these algae blooms can be toxic if it's a blue-green algae, produce cyanobacteria. And so we do want to make sure that we get this information out because folks throughout the summer may report this, and at times they don't know where to report it, how to report it, what to look for. So we want to make sure we put this website or this information on the website for folks to find. So what you can see here is this is actually an advisory that's posted by Danner that there's a link there, and so it lists the active advisories that have been posted for 2025. So these are systems that have been tested to find that there is a harmful algae bloom going on, which at that point there is then an advisory that's posted. Now, we also have some tips and tricks in there. For example, the rule is that when in doubt, stay out. So if folks are concerned that there's an algae bloom actively occurring at their water body or the water body that they have property on or that they're recreating on, recommendation is to just stay out, and then they can then report that information as well. So for us, it's really good, a form of citizen science, to have folks report this information so that it can then be monitored. And if there's an advisory that needs to be posted, it can be posted that way. So again, nothing as far as, say, a regulatory aspect to this information item, but just something that often comes up working with folks when they're out on lakeshore property or recreating in general may be useful for them. One of the next topics that we have, again, nothing that requires a permit, but just simply a topic that often comes up for folks around water bodies, and that is the topic of fish kills. It happened periodically throughout the year in South Dakota. We provide information, just general background information on what may cause it. So we have winter kills, summer kills, and also in some cases, spring winter kills. We want to outline what the responses are by Game Fish and Parks. So what we will do out here is document that. We do keep an active database of fish kills that includes information such as species, estimated number, and probable cause. Additionally, in some cases, we'll have staff go out and evaluate the fish kill to determine if it's a partial or a full, which then directs some of our stocking efforts moving forward. We also want to outline that fish are not removed by Game Fish and Parks following a fish kill. And then if folks do observe a fish kill, because we're not always out there to find those, we provide the reporting tools so that folks can reach out to us, notify us that there has been a fish kill so that we can, again, get out there for documentation and then potential stocking if it's desired, or not desired, excuse me, if it's needed following that fish kill. We also have information on docks and boat lifts. Folks that have shoreline property, a common practice is to install a dock, a floating fishing pier, a boat lift. With that, there are administrative rules that regulate the dimensions of those, the placement of those. And so we want to make sure that that information is known for folks. Additionally, if folks want to go outside what these standards are, there is a dock variance permitting process, so they can find that information. So what we have here, for example, is the definitions as far as what counts as a dock or boat lift. That's an administrative rule. So if they know what they're placing in the water, does it count as a dock or something that may be placed and considered a dock or floating fishing pier, floating pier? We also have the standards. So the distance from shoreline that it can be, for example, a maximum of 60 feet. Also, if they have a T or an L that comes off, what the maximum length of that can be, 24 feet. These docks have maximum widths as well as minimum. So again, those standards that are in administrative rule are now placed on the website with some diagrams to help describe that. Additionally, if there are going to be there's a desire to have something that's outside of what these standards are, there's a variance permitting process. We have that outlined as well as links to find that application. Additionally, we do have contact information for our aquatic habitat and access biologists. So if folks have questions on what they're thinking, they can reach out to staff, say prior to going down the permitting process, down that pathway. So again, just some additional information all in one place as far as docks and boat lifts and what's allowed in South Dakota, and then just some general information. And the last topic that we have is just aquatic invasive species. Now, we certainly have a lot of aquatic invasive species information on the website. We have our one-stop shop, if you will, the sdleastwanted.sd.gov. However, what we have on this location is information that's maybe more specific to folks that are living on a lakeshore that may have infrastructure in the water. For example, if they have a watercraft that's moored for the entire summer on a water body, we have information that's more tailored to that as far as what they should be looking for when they pull that watercraft in the fall. Additionally, if it's on a water body that's positive for AIS, such as zebra mussels, we want to make sure that we provide the exemptions that are in rule right now that allow for storing of infrastructure. For example, a boat lift, if it's removed from the water with zebra mussels on, it can be stored on that riparian property and then launched back into that same water body without needing to remove that AIS. If it's going to be transported for decontamination, there's an exemption that allows folks to do that. And additionally, if there's AIS that folks have that they're taking for disposal, there's an exemption that allows them to possess it. So again, these are exemptions for our AIS rules that are fairly specific to lakeshore living. And we want to make sure that we provide those examples and again, more focused information than what you might find on that sdleastwanted.sd.gov. Additionally, we have information on citizen monitoring. Folks that have lakeshore property can certainly be collecting information that's very useful for game fish and parks as far as monitoring for aquatic invasive species, whether those are new species within a system. There's information there as far as what they can do to create settler samplers for zebra mussels or look for aquatic vegetation. And then also the portal online where they can submit that information for game fish and parks to review. And then certainly again, that contact information for game fish and parks staff. So those are the topics that we have. Just this image you can see on the bottom right here. Folks go to the fish tab on the Game Fish and Parks website. They'll see a list of tabs on the left side. One of those is going to be the Lakeshore Toolkit. It's a drop-down menu. If they hit it, they can see those additional items within there that we just discussed. And then as far as how we've disseminated this information so far, we have an active contact list for lake associations that we work with annually, send them information on aquatic invasive species. We have sent them information on this lakeshore toolkit. That way they know the location on it, what's covered within it. And the ask is that they disseminate that to their lakeshore association members. So as of right now, this is how we've disseminated this information. And again, it's just meant to help pull everything together in one location for folks that may have an interest in these certain topics and lakeshore property. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Jake? Comments? The one thing, Jake, I just want to say thank you. I know the members of the Lakes and Streams Association has brought some of this stuff up. It looks like the department listened to their requests and have moved forward to make it more accessible through this toolkit. So thank you for listening and doing that. Job well done.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move on. 20